Biomass and solar energy expansion could add over 2,000 jobs to Northeast Minnesota economy, according to a new report from the University of Minnesota's Energy Transition Lab. Joining us now to tell us more is Ellen Anderson, Executive Director of the lab. Welcome to the Roadhouse, Ellen.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight.
Well, you'll have to bring us up to speed on your work, and let's start with what exactly is the Energy Transition Lab?
Well, we are a fairly new center at the university that works across all disciplines and works with lots of external partners on collaborative projects to try to advance our energy systems to the future. So we work a lot on renewable energy, on grid modernization, we work on energy storage, we work on solar at the university, and many other things. It's really fun.
Well, and what you've been most recently at work on, it looks like, is a study in partnership with a lot of other bureaus, agencies, looks like the Business and Economic Research and the Leavitt School of Business at the U of M Duluth. You've been looking at renewable alternative energy in the northeastern portion of the state. Tell us about that study.
Yeah, so this study, first of all, it came out of an energy charrette or community meeting in the city of Duluth, where Duluth stakeholders all came together and said, what do we want to envision for our energy future and the region? And one of the priorities that came out of that meeting was, let's find out about the jobs and the economic impact we could have if we were to try to transition to some more locally produced energy from local energy sources. And so that was the starting point. They asked us to work on this research, and we partnered with the Bureau at UMD, they have expertise in economic modeling. And so my team did all the data collection and writing and scoping out the study. So we did it as a partnership.
And what sort of data were you collecting?
Well, we identified a set of projects to analyze, and so we picked five different bioenergy or biomass-related projects, and we also picked some solar projects. And the criteria for picking these was to pick projects that had been studied or were under consideration for the Arrowhead region, which is the whole northeast Minnesota region, and that we had good data on. So we picked Grand Marais as one because there's been a lot of people studying and talking about the idea of a biomass-fired district energy system in Grand Marais. And we picked some other projects that we hoped were likely to move forward or at least were being considered for moving forward. And those are the projects that we identified.
Okay, and so it was an assessment of their feasibility, of the economic impact. I see you really came back with some impressive numbers on the economic side. Could you talk about, you know, what were you finding as far as if these projects were to come to fruition, what kind of benefits are we looking at for the region?
Yeah, so we were super excited by the results. So on the bio or wood-based side, we were looking at, just quickly to summarize, the Grand Marais biomass district heating system, the Duluth energy system plant retrofit and converting that to biomass. We looked at a torrefaction processing plant, and I can explain that, and two plants that would produce chemical material out of wood-based products, out of wood, as well as I mentioned, about 2+ megawatts of solar projects. So in total, these projects would have an amazing economic impact on the region. They would create more than 1,000 long-term permanent jobs, as well as nearly 1,600 construction jobs, and that, you know, millions of dollars of value-added spending to the region. So it would be a big, big impact.
Yeah, and certainly for, I think, the northeastern, you know, region was suitable to look at this kind of retooling and reinvestment too. Talk about, you know, why the Northeast is so important to study.
Well, first of all, the Northeast has an incredible wood forest resource that is available for locally produced energy. So it's a great resource. Secondly, we all, we all aware of the economic hard times that northeastern Minnesota has experienced over, sort of through the boom and bust years. And so with recent job losses in the timber industry and in other industries, it's just critically important to identify sustainable kinds of economic opportunities for the region that will support good jobs for years to come.
Sure. New age jobs. Now, I would venture one of them is torrefaction. You mentioned this before,
yeah.
And this fascinated me. I hadn't heard of this term before. What is torrefaction?
Yeah, so torrefaction involves basically taking wood, whether it's pellets or pieces of wood, and applying heat to them so that they turn into a harder, more concentrated substance, which is basically a substitute for coal. Mm. So it has the same BTU value as the coal that we commonly use in Minnesota. It's easier to transport because it concentrates the BTU value of the wood. And it takes a small amount of energy to produce it, but you can use the biomass to produce it as well. So it is really an efficient kind of energy resource. And NRRI, which is the Natural Resources Research Institute, which is located in Duluth and Coleraine and is part of UMD or affiliated with UMD, is doing research on this, and they just built a kind of a pilot plant to demonstrate this. And so we got data from them about what it would look like to create a full-scale plant that would produce this material and use it to power a number of plants in the region.
And it would appear that sector or that specialty of your study, it had the most promising results, if I'm not mistaken. Like when it came to the biggest benefits, the biggest impacts, it was the idea of like producing biomass, correct?
Yeah, I mean the production plant as opposed to just using it for energy, but actually producing the material that can, is a value-added product, as well as the biochemical plants that, you can take wood trees, you can take trees and capture the cellulosic material and convert that into succinic acid and other kinds of materials that can be directly used in plants that make chemicals, that make paints, that make plastics, all kinds of modern materials that we use basically petroleum-based resources for. So, yeah, it's the value-added projects that really, and the value-added product out of the local wood resource that really add a lot of economic impact.
I'm Dave Terstig. We're talking with Ellen Anderson. She's the executive director of the U of M Energy Transition Lab, and we are talking about a recent report entitled Duluth's Energy Future, Economic Modeling of Proposed Biomass and Solar Initiatives. And Ellen, it was just sharing with us the new age technique of turning wood pellets into better wood pellets. It sounds like torrefaction. What's the environmental impact of some of these operations? I hear stuff like biochemical, and I kind of worry about the pollution.
Well, you're basically replacing fossil fuels with a wood-based product. And so you're right at the get-go, you are reducing the carbon impacts over the life cycle. Mm. Now, there's a lot of studies and a lot of controversy about whether if you make energy out of wood, is that carbon neutral compared to fossil fuels? And there's a great deal of research that says that depending on how you harvest it, depending on how long, what the life cycle is of the trees, et cetera, et cetera. But for a lot of the bioenergy applications that we're talking about, you're using kind of the excess wood that really, it lies on the forest floor, the slash or the branches, or the tops, the things that sit and compost or become fodder for forest fires. And so using those especially has a lower carbon impact because you don't have to necessarily cut down a whole tree.
And it would, I would presume, hence the term value added, where it was otherwise going to waste.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Great stuff, Ellen. Any other surprises in the report? I know you studied Grand Marais. Of course, our district biomass plant is on hold, or perhaps not likely. Are any of these other projects moving forward?
Well, the Duluth Steam Plant upgrade and conversion certainly intends, yes, it's moving forward. You know, it's like a lot of other things, is kind of stuck in the political quagmire where the bonding bill didn't move forward at the state capitol. Mm. And there's still the potential of a special legislative session to get that money approved. I hope that happens before next year. But that's kind of hard to tell what's going to happen with that. So they're waiting to try to get some financial support from the state to do some of that upgrade. So a lot of the solar projects are moving forward. And some of these biochemical plants, I think, are very likely to move forward as well. I would say the torrefaction plant is kind of, we don't have a time for that to happen. We don't, it's at the pilot stage now. So that's a matter of stay tuned. And hopefully in the coming years that could happen.
Are these all principally municipal projects, or is there private industry involved as well?
The biochemical plants are definitely private industry. The Duluth plant is, it's supported by the municipality, but it's partially publicly owned. Yes, and so there's a range of ownership models. Same with the solar.
Sure. Well, what else is your organization working on? This, I think, is something you've been the last several years studying. Are you on to something new now?
We're spending a lot of time thinking about energy storage and how that fits into our future energy system, because it's a, it has potential to be a real game changer. So over the last few decades, we've seen the price of renewable energy like wind and solar decline, rapidly. So, we expect the same thing's going to happen with energy storage. And so wind has become one of the cheapest resources out there, wind energy. Mm. And solar is not quite there yet, but it's probably going to be the cheapest electricity source in the coming decade. That's that's my prediction. And a lot of experts agree on that. And so I think storage is following that same trajectory. And if you think especially about big batteries becoming cost-effective to integrate into energy systems, then suddenly you can have large amounts of renewable energy, well over 50% with storage. You can also start to really change the profile of our energy usage and make the grid a lot more efficient. And, for example, you know how on hot summer afternoons, everybody's running their air conditioners and we hit peak demand. And the utility companies build power plants, peaking power plants, just for a few hours of the year to meet that demand. Hmm. If you had energy storage, you could smooth off that peak and level out energy usage. That would save customers a ton of money. It would allow a variety of renewable sources to really fill in instead of having to have, say, a natural gas peaking plant. So there's lots and lots of opportunity there, and we're trying to figure it out.
Well, and it's, tech is certainly coming to the forefront here, and big data. How important has it been in your modeling to sort of see the progress in tech? And could you have done this type of study 10 years ago? What do you predict for the future?
Well, it seems to me that as we look at trying to make our energy system the modern energy system that we need, which is, more flexible, more resilient, lower carbon, more dispersed and controlled by lots and lots of different energy producers as people start to produce their own energy more, you really need the technology to enable that, and you need data, because when we talk about the smart grid, you're really talking about putting digital technology on top of this old grid that looks just like it did when Thomas Edison was around. And so when you enable it, when you have data, and you have modern technology, you can control it in a way that, I mean, energy users can control their usage so that they can save a lot of money and it can just be more efficient. So I would say that our energy transition is all about the sort of the integrate, you know, sort of the connect, the interconnection between technology, policy, and markets, and they all matter in terms of moving things forward. And so, like, if you want to go back to bioenergy, we have propane that's being shipped in to Minnesota, and especially in places like Grand Marais, and you have natural gas that's being piped in, and those are, you know, the market prices fluctuate on those energy sources, and that's partly why it's hard for things like bioenergy to take to get a solid footing, because things like natural gas are really cheap right now, but the prices fluctuate, they're volatile, and they increase over time, and these are all imported energy sources. And so trying to get the policy right and the market signals right so that we can shift to more locally produced sources that we know are renewable and we know that we will have for the long haul, regardless of what happens in other states and countries, that's a pretty powerful way to envision more of a stable energy system in the future. Stable, renewable, lower-cost energy system.
A nice way to transition, Ellen. Thank you. Thank you for all your work. Ellen Anderson at the U of M Energy Transition Lab. Final question, Ellen. Will there ever be a time of transition will be done and you'll have to, you know, retire and call it good?
Yeah, absolutely. I would like to retire someday. So I, you know, I'm really proud that Minnesota has been a leader in doing, you know, really showing what can be done in a state that, that doesn't have any fossil fuels, to see how we can try to develop our own resources more and more and become, you know, exporters to the world of technology and of renewable energy and other kinds of resources that we do have in spades. So,
yeah.
I'm excited to see where we go in the future.
Yeah, thanks for leading us in that quest, Ellen. Can you give out a web address for folks to learn more about at home?
Yes, that was just what I was going to say. Thank you so much for asking. So you can find us at www.energytransition.umn.edu.
Great, and we'll also have that link through with our archived interview on our website. But that was energytransition.umn.edu. So thank you so much, Ellen Anderson. I'd have to be remiss if I didn't wish you a happy 4th of July on Monday.
Happy Independence Day,
yeah.
And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.